please?
The court is ready to hear argument in the consolidated cases 040247 and 040631, which were consolidated for argument.
May it please the court, Ms. Deborah Haynes said we'll hear argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes.
May it please the court. The Court of Appeals in this case erred when it improperly transformed grievance procedures that Dallas County provided to its employees into a constitutionally protected property interest in continued public employment. To accomplish this transformation, the Court of Appeals contradicted the large body of law by this court that is well established in its opinions dating back 100 years in the area of at-will employment. Those principles, since that time, have been uniformly applied by all those Court of Appeals that have addressed similar issues until these cases came along. The errors evident in the words chosen by the Court of Appeals in its opinions. The property interest was created not by the words used in Dallas County's policy manual, but rather in the words that had been omitted. And through that omission, the court implied a modification of the at-will relationship between Dallas County and its deputy constables. Because these cases present only claims under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, the dispositive question before the court is whether the respondents, plaintiffs below, have a constitutionally protected property interest in their continued public employment.
What's the purpose of the grievance process?
The purpose of the grievance process, Your Honor, is to give employees the opportunity to be heard by others than their supervisor, to possibly have termination decisions overturned, and to give them a voice in their employment matters.
So if the employment decision is overturned by higher authority, does that have to be based on cause, or how does that work?
It just is the particular procedures that Dallas County chose to adopt as part of its civil service system provides for supervisors' decisions to be reviewed by department heads, and after that, if the employee is not happy with the dismissal decisions, then it has the opportunity to use the grievance procedures that have been set up by Dallas County. The Civil Service Commission is made up of Dallas County commissioners, and they then can review the decision and decide if they choose to reverse it or not.
But what are the constraints? Is it substantial evidence? Is it de novo? Can the county commissioners decide, well, there was really no reason to terminate the employee, but...
There really are not standards in the grievance policy. It really is a very much an opportunity to be heard. Now, the procedures then provide for review in district court, and those are by substantial evidence.
All right, so is it a mandatory process? Does it constitute an exhaustion requirement? If the employee is terminated, do they have to go through the grievance procedure before they sue in district court?
I would presume so, Your Honor. But I think then the question becomes, what are they suing for? And if the question is, are they suing over the failure to be provided the grievance processes as a matter of local policy as opposed to a matter of constitutional right, then I think you have different issues and different paths.
Well, I guess here's what I'm getting at. Let's just say the constable gets a letter, says you're terminated. No reason, just says you're terminated. In 2 weeks, you're out of here. The constable goes through the grievance procedure and says, I didn't do anything wrong. And all the way up the line, they just say terminate, terminate, terminate. It gets to the district court, and the district court says, I don't see any basis in the record for you being terminated. Does the district court have to reinstate them? What's the substance here?
Dallas County is has an at-will employment relationship with all of its employees, and that has not been altered by the policy manual.
So what's the purpose of the grievance?
It's the opportunity to be heard by someone besides your immediate supervisor.
And then once you get to the district court, does the district court look at substantial evidence? Do they say, well, it doesn't matter why you terminated, the county has the right to terminate you?
Well, I think that's right.
So what's the point of the appeal to the district?
It's the opportunity to go beyond your immediate supervisor.
Doesn't that procedure in itself create a substantial interest for the employee?
No, it does not.
Why not?
It does not create a property interest. The question is whether it creates a constitutionally protected property interest. And the law is very clear on what it takes to require that.
And what is to follow up with Justice Owen's question, what is the purpose of that procedure?
The procedure is to give them the opportunity to be heard.
But it's all for naught at the end of the day.
No, it's not, because the county commissioners may choose to reverse. They may decide that an employee has been treated unfairly, or that there's some basis for personal animosity between a supervisor and employee. It gives them the opportunity to be able to have somebody else hear what their complaint is. And the grievance policy can be used for other reasons besides dismissal. It's available anytime a Dallas County employee has something to grieve about.
But isn't it standard procedure for these newly elected constables to hire their own staff and terminate the people that were there supporting the predecessor?
Well, they don't terminate, Your Honor. What the statutes require, the local government code that governs deputy constables, provides that a constable appoints his or her deputies in writing, that the appointment of those constables has to be approved as necessary by the county commissioners, and that the constables are legally responsible. As a result of that framework, both for deputy sheriffs and deputy constables, the courts of appeals have recognized in this state that the appointment of a constable lasts for as long as the term of the appointing constable, the deputy's term, does. So what happens is when the constable who appointed his term expires, then that employment expires, and there must be a reappointment under the new constable or under the new term.
Is there any problem constitutionally with the decision not to reappoint for purely political reasons? You were not in my administration. You supported my opponent. I just don't want you for that reason.
I think that's a First Amendment claim, which is not an issue in this particular case. There's nothing about this particular policy or procedure that would stand in the way of an employee whose protected speech had been impaired by an employment decision from moving forward under Section 1983. That would be a constitutionally protected interest that would give rise to a 1983 claim. That is different than what we have here. That is not an issue here. And I don't think that anything Dallas County did or can do alters that fundamental right under the United States Constitution.
I just want to follow up, just to be sure I understand. I follow your argument about how the process is designed to give employees a hearing.
Right.
But I'm not sure then what you complain of to the district court if you're an at-will employee.
I agree, Your Honor. I don't have a disagreement with that. I think that the mere fact that that is the way the system is set up does not in any way meet this court's test for what it takes to modify the at-will employment relationship.
Well, the existence of a constitutionally protected property interest is going to depend on whether we construe the policy manual to require for-cause termination.
Absolutely.
And so if you look at 4.22, it says the notice shall specify the cause for termination.
Yes.
That would seem to me to require for-cause termination.
I don't believe that it does, Your Honor, because there still could be a reason. I mean, for-cause typically means, as at-will employment is defined, for-cause, no cause, good cause, whatever is the at-will arrangement. So there are different kinds of cause. So it's giving a reason to the employee.
Which is my point. I mean, when they say you shall specify a cause, that seems inconsistent with no cause termination.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think it comports with all of the case law out of this court with respect to what it takes, because I think that the policy has to specifically say, not just cause, but that the termination has to be only for just cause.
Which brings in Dr. Maudlin Taylor, the county's director of personnel and civil service, who said the plaintiffs can only have been terminated for cause. Your brief states that her opinion is irrelevant here. Isn't it some evidence of what the manual means?
It is not.
When the high-level employees and officials in the county give their opinion of what the policy manual means?
It is not, Your Honor. It is not, because whether there is a constitutionally protected property interest is a question of law, first of all. And second of all, as this court has said, that a county exercising a governmental function is not subject to estoppel by statements made by its various employees. So she is unable to bind the county by that statement. In addition, Your Honor,
it doesn't have to be an estoppel argument. It could be a matter of interpreting the policy manual, Section 4.22, as Justice O'Neill just pointed out, and trying to figure out what that language means. I don't disagree that it's a question of law, but by saying it's a question of law, are you saying that we should not consider the high-level policy statements of the county's employees as to what the manual means?
You should not, Your Honor. It is irrelevant. It's a question of law for this court under the applicable tests. 1 month before she gave her deposition in this case, you will find in the record at page 49, the clerk's record, that the county, in answering requests for admissions, denied the existence of a property right.
Let me ask you, in Grounds versus Tolar, we said that by requiring pre-established reasons, the Term Contract Non-Renewal Act created a substantive right. Now, why is this not requiring pre-established reasons?
Because the provision under 4.21, which is the provision that the plaintiffs rely upon in this case, is only specifying when employees can be dismissed without prior notice. If you look down below at the other provisions, you'll see that notice is required, predetermination, hearing.
But doesn't that lead to then you can terminate with notice for no reason?
It does not, Your Honor, because this court's test is that you have to specifically and expressly indicate in this kind of policy manual that you are terminated, you can only be terminated for just cause. There is no language to that effect in here. There is case law as well that we've cited. There are three reasons why that's wrong.
I understand that. Hold on.
Yeah.
The logical, though, follow-up to that is that you would be able to send notice that we're terminating you for no reason.
Right.
And that's the distinction that you're drawing, that they intended to draw a distinction. You no notice if there's reason. But you have to give a notice if there's no reason.
No, because the list under 4.21 is not exhaustive. It has but not limited to language in it. It also has a catch-all at the end. There is plenty of Texas case law that indicates non-exhaustive lists do not translate into only for just cause. In addition to that, we have a disclaimer in this manual. We have a specific disclaimer that this policy manual is not to be construed as a contract of employment or a provision guaranteeing specific term or tenure of employment. This court has specifically said that a disclaimer negates modification of the at-will doctrine. You have to look at the totality of the policy manual. You can't take the words out in isolation. So we don't have a specific and express limitation. We have a non-exhaustive list. Specific language in 4.201 talks about dismissal without prior notice. In addition to that, we have a statement by the county in the manual that it reserved the right to unilaterally amend the policies. Texas law is clear that that is an indicator that at-will employment has not been modified. And finally, at best, we have an ambiguity. And it's been very clear under Texas law as well as the Fifth Circuit interpreting Texas law that ambiguities are resolved in favor of the employer. So the bottom line is that we've cited many Court of Appeals decisions this Court's decisions in our brief, looking at all of these applicable principles, specific and express language saying that the decisions of the county are specifically modified for only just cause termination.
Is that distinguishable from the situation in Browns versus Tolar? Because there we said the prerequisites include providing the teacher with notice of pre-established reasons for non-renewal in a hearing, and that could be decided at the local level, which seems to track what's happening here. And my question is, do we need to overrule Tolar to rule your way?
No, because under Browns versus Tolar, under the Term Contract Non-Renewal Act, the court ruled that there was an absolute limit on the discretion of the school district because there were certain procedures in place. And if a school district under the Term Contract Non-Renewal Act is required to set up specific reasons for not renewing, then they're required to give those reasons if they're going to non-renew before a specific time. If not, they are precluded. They cannot discharge the teacher. They cannot non-renew the teacher. So there was an absolute limit. That's that specific and express limitation on the employer's discretion that exists in Grounds versus Tolar and exists in any case. This is not something that you root around in the language and think, gosh, maybe I can find something here. Texas law is very clear that in order to create the constitutionally protected property interest, you have to have the specific and express limitation that determination can only be for just cause.
So if we get back to the district court. So there's nothing in the record. What can the district court say? You know, they didn't, since they didn't specify a cause for terminating you, and there's no evidence supporting that there's any reason to terminate you, doesn't the district court have to reinstate under the grievance procedure?
No, because the grievance procedure gives no substantive right, no constitutionally protected right to continued employment.
So what's there for the district court to review in any, ever, if they always have the right, no matter what, to discharge them? What's the point?
I don't disagree with you,
Your Honor.
It's
kind of like a feel-good policy.
It is. It is a policy.
Well, why involve the district courts in a feel-good policy? I mean, the district court is required, I thought, to reinstate if the record doesn't support what was done below.
Well, if you look at the grievance policy, Your Honor, and if you look at 4.26, if the grievance is upheld, so the point is that it's not just a matter.
We don't have that in our briefs. But what is 4.26
says this: if a grievance is upheld, the Category C employee may be reinstated and may be granted back pay depending on the determination of the grievance. It is a grievance procedure, which means if I have a complaint about
I
how
complain
I've been
that I'm terminated, and you didn't tell me why I was terminated, and no one will tell me why I'm terminated. I go to district court, and the court says, you weren't given a reason. There's no substantial evidence supporting your termination. Doesn't the court have to reinstate the employee?
No, because it's at-will employment.
What is civil service protection then?
Civil service protection depends on what the county adopts as civil service protection. The statute, the local government code provision, it gave Dallas County the authority to establish a civil service protection system, gave it total discretion to decide what that system would be, and whether it would give any substantive rights or whether it would only give procedural protection.
What are Category C employees?
Pardon me?
Category C employees.
Correct.
What are they?
The Category C employees are really pretty much the catch-all. I mean, the deputy constables are swept in under this. Most employees of Dallas County are under that, as opposed to elected officials and others who fall under the other categories. There's a Category D that involves employees who are employed by virtue of grant money. But C is kind of the catch-all kind of provision. But I think
if I can follow up on that question, what's the purpose of C protection? Why create these categories if everything's going to be at will? What's the purpose of categories?
Because there are two different issues, and the law is very clear that grievance procedures and the establishment of grievance procedures does not mean the granting of a constitutionally protected property interest. Those are two entirely different issues. And what happened in this particular case was the two got meshed together. They have to be analyzed separately. And so what we have to look at is the entirety of this policy manual and look under the court's tests for whether there has been modification of at will. And there is not, the test has not been met. Dallas County chose, as under local government code, section 86.001, to set up civil service and to do it however they wanted to do it. And they chose to adopt grievance procedures out of concern that employees didn't feel like they had the chance to be heard. If you don't like what your supervisor did, you go to your department head. If you don't like that, you can have three commissioners who are the civil service commission review to make sure you've been dealt with fairly.
Counsel, you said that the deputy constable's terms expire when the constable's term expires.
Yes.
With regard to deputy sheriffs, the statute's pretty clear on that. It says the deputy sheriffs serve at the pleasure of the sheriff. That same language is not in Chapter 86 for constables. What statutory language do you cite to support the position that the deputy constable's term expires?
I actually rely on case law interpreting that, the deputy sheriff and the deputy constable statute. The deputy constable statute does require appointment in writing and approval by the commissioner, and it also makes the particular constable responsible or liable for the acts of the deputy constable. And what we've got is the Dallas Court of Appeals decision, the Arrington case. And then we also look to the, and it cites back to the El Paso case law that deals with deputy sheriffs that talk about how terms, because of the fact that the deputies are responsible to the appointing official, constable, or sheriff, it is viewed as being tied to the term, and that's the way the courts of appeals have interpreted both the constable statute as well as the sheriff statute. And it makes sense if you hire me to work for you, And then Justice Owen is elected to be the constable the next year. She, under the statute, has to appoint her own constables, and there are budgetary concerns. So it is the practical extension of the statute in the real world.
And your response to the respondent's argument that your position is in the old legislative world, that Representative Wolins and others passed a statutory change that makes Arrington essentially of no effect in the new legislative environment.
Well, Arrington dealt with the question of whether they were Category C employees and decided that they were not and not entitled to protections under the policy manual. So what ended up happening after that was that Representative Wolins left the legislature, and that's when 86.011 was put into local government code, which gave large counties the ability to be able to do these civil service systems that include deputy constables, which Dallas County chose to do. But it had, there was no dictate on what that system would look like. It was entirely, if you look at the language of the statute, it was entirely up to Dallas County as to what it was going to do.
So there was a legislative change, but it didn't change how the process works in Dallas.
No, because it was up to Dallas to change how things were done in Dallas. The legislature gave Dallas County the authority to do that. And then it was up to Dallas whether it chose to do it, and once it chose to do it, then how it was going to do it and how far it would go.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Douglas Alexander, this is an argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, I've got seven areas I'd want to cover that were based upon the argument that was just made. I'm going to try to bang through them as quickly as possible to leave some time at the end to really go into them in depth. First, Justice Wainwright, you would ask a question about the testimony of the designated corporate representative. We are not claiming an estoppel. We are claiming what you are talking about, an interpretation of their own rules. Let me give you a cite to a case. It's Public Utility Commission of Texas versus Gulf States. 809 Southwest 2nd, 201 at 207, Texas Supreme Court case.
I want to know if this disclaimer that they have in their manual.
Yes, we can talk about the disclaimer then right now. The disclaimer provision has to do with disclaiming this being a contract.
Right.
It's important to understand that in this case, we are predicating our argument upon the existence of civil service rules, not a contract, completely different. If we are making a breach of contract claim, for instance, if this was the private employer context in which you had an employee handbook that had a four-cause limitation, then that type of disclaimer would work. But here what we have are civil service rules, and for that reason the disclaimer does not work. Now, getting back to this point, if you'll turn under tab one, we don't just have the testimony of the corporate designated representative giving the opinion, the interpretation of Dallas County. I'm citing here three cases to you, other than this case, in which courts around the state have held for 17 years. In each of these cases, I've got them quoted, have held that civil service employees in Dallas County have a protected property interest in their jobs. Now, what's significant is that in each of these cases, Dallas County never disputed that proposition. Dallas County never disputed that proposition. It took as a given in each of those cases that it was protected, so that we know back for 17 years, Dallas County has consistently interpreted its civil service rules as creating a protected property interest.
And that was also the county's position at the grievance process in this case
yes.
as well, wasn't it?
In what?
At the grievance stage, that was also Dallas County's position in
correct.
This case, wasn't
That's
it?
Correct. So they've consistently taken that position. Now, moving on to...
Well, let me get back to your first point. Why should we treat the adoption of civil service rules differently from a private contract?
Okay, let's look at that. If you'll turn to tab 2, I've got this handout. What the courts have made clear, and the Supreme Court, I'm not quoting this one now, Perry v. Sinderman, indicates that you can have protected property interests arise from various different ways, either from rules or from mutually explicit understanding. If you look at the Warzone case out of the Seventh Circuit, what they're distinguishing here is you can have civil service regulations that give rise to that interest, you can have a collective bargaining agreement that does it, or alternatively, you can have a contract. And what this court recognized in the Bexar County Sheriff's Civil Service Commission case is if you have a for-cause limitation in civil service rules, that is sufficient to create the property interest. Okay? It's civil service rules. So that a contract disclaimer, and let me explain what we have here. We have a 169-page manual. Okay? And what they're disclaiming on the front of that is this shall not be interpreted as a contract. We agree. It's not a contract. And I'll give you an example as to why that has meaning. Dallas County doesn't want people coming in finding some trivial point in here and raising it as a breach of contract. I'll give you an example. If you turn to page 93, and it's in the record, page 93 of that civil service rules has a provision regarding training. It says that civil service employees shall receive training to develop their potential. What Dallas County has by its disclaimer is it's disclaiming the ability of a civil service employee coming in saying, you know, you never trained me to my full potential, and therefore I'm suing you for breach of contract. That kind of claim would fail.
Do you think that Dallas County can hire an employee for a term, a specified term?
No. And I'll tell you why. Are you talking about like the four-year term of the constable?
Well, it's just any term.
So, no.
You know, I want you to do this job, but it's going to run out in 2 years, and I don't want to keep you after that.
They can't. They can't do that for civil service employees. And the reason for that is, let me give you a cite. It's section 158. This is local government code, section 158.010 A and D. This is the local government code rules relating to civil service employees. And what it says in section A is a department head coming on board has the authority to hire people. But then it says under section D, that authority shall not affect the status of those people who are already on board. And so it's dealing with the situation, and this is what civil service rules do, it's avoiding the situation of, you know, out with the old, in with the new every time somebody comes on board. A constable under the Constitution has a four-year term. But once deputy constables were made civil service employees in 1990, they no longer were confined to a term. The case law that she's citing to, the Arrington case, was decided before that change and, in fact, was exactly what prompted Dallas County to extend civil service protection to deputy constables.
But it just seems like that if you were facing a sudden onslaught of work and you just wanted somebody for 6 months, for 2 years, your answer is that it just has to be an independent contract. That's all you can do.
Well, that's interesting. I think, and I could be wrong, and it's just that my knowledge of the rules is not that exhaustive. I think that there are provisions for temporary employees. It's just that they're not given civil service protection.
Okay,
I believe that's correct. But if you are a deputy constable, you have to go through a 12-month period of probation before you can get full civil service protection, which, of course, begs the question, if they're at will, why do we do that?
Well, I'm interested in the disclaimer argument that you're making. Are you saying that you cannot, that the county cannot disclaim civil service protection? Or is it this particular disclaimer doesn't get you there? I mean, are we interpreting?
Well, yeah, right. No. Okay, yes. They can disclaim it.
Oh,
yes.
So we're just quibbling over the interpretation of this particular disclaimer.
Correct. And let me make sure that this point is clear. It's up to the county whether to adopt a civil service system. Counties, it's entirely voluntary in this state. If you have more than 200,000 employees in the county, then you are permitted by the legislature to adopt civil service rules, and you can define the parameters of those. But once you've done it, then you have to live with what you've adopted.
I understand that, but let me ask you, you'd have to admit that there's some tension between the disclaimer and the civil service protection.
In this case, I say there's not because it's apples and oranges. In other words, the disclaimer is a disclaimer of being able to sue for breach of contract. It's not a disclaimer for being able to complain of the fact that you've been deprived of this property interest given you by civil service rules.
Well,
that's what's so important to understand.
You're saying if you use the label civil service, then you can't have at-will employees.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, and this gets to, I mean, let's talk about it. You can have civil service and still remain at will. You can have a civil service that has, I think the term that Justice Medina used so well, a pat you on the head policy. You can do that. Dallas County chose not to do that. It's got a very sophisticated civil service system which draws a distinction between category. In fact, here's a good example. It has Category A employees who are not civil service and are therefore at will. It's got Category B who are not civil service and are therefore at will. And it's got Category C who are civil service. And, I mean, let's flip to the provisions, which are under tab 4, are entirely different. Civil service employees, and this gets back to your point, Justice O'Neill, if you look at 4.22, they really try to speak out of both sides of the mouth with that one. 4.22 is the notice of termination that a civil service employee gets handed. It has to be done in every case in which you terminate somebody because that's what triggers the process for being able to grieve, and ultimately, we'll talk about this in a minute, go to the district court. It says, and it, such notice shall specify the cause for the termination. You can't say out of one side of your mouth, well, we can dismiss them without cause because they're at will, but then, on the other hand, recognize that you have to specify the cause. And let's talk about, I think, who raised the point about...
Why involve the district courts in this field?
This is it. Okay, let's talk about that. I think that this is the... Why involve the district court? Let's talk about that. The section you need to look at here of the local government code is 158.0121. That is the provision that allows for an appeal to the district court under the substantial evidence rule. Well, substantial evidence of what? Substantial evidence of the good cause that you were supposedly denied.
Well, but you just said that the... it's up to the government to provide whatever civil service system it wants.
Correct.
It can provide a feel-good system.
I beg your pardon?
It can provide a, quote, feel-good system.
It can.
And so they would have no argument, basically, in the trial court.
But you let's go back then. Excellent point. So the question then, it really boils down to this. Is this a feel-good system? Or is this a four-cause system? And the answer is, it is a four-cause system. 4.22, you can't explain it another way. Why draw the distinction between Category A, Category B, and Category C? It makes no sense.
Okay, let's take that as a given. Let's take it that 4.22 and all those provisions are four-cause.
Correct.
But could they not have just said, we don't want to create any right of action to sue for damages, so we're going to put this disclaimer in here and... You have to have good cause, but you can't sue us for damages.
That would be constitutionally impermissible.
Why?
Because you can't, with the one hand, give a constitutionally protected right and then say you cannot sue over it. What you could say is this.
You're presuming the constitutionally protected right. In looking at whether there is one, we're supposed to look at these two provisions together. And so if we say the disclaimer, they intended to give with the right hand but take away with the left, then you don't have a constitutionally protected property.
Well, the thing is, my point is, apparently not making it clear, the disclaimer doesn't take away with the right. The disclaimer of a contract action doesn't take away for a suit for breach of civil service rules. That's apples and oranges, two entirely different things. Now, if you had a different disclaimer, if you had a disclaimer that said on the front, these... all employees in this county are at will, that would at least create an ambiguity, okay? In that case, you would, with the left hand, be saying they're at will, but with the right hand in the dismissal provision saying they're for cause. And then you're in an ambiguous situation. What would you do? You'd look at the Fifth Circuit's decision in Batterton, and county would probably win in that situation. That's an ambiguity. But please understand that a contract disclaimer in no way is a disclaimer of an action for civil service.
Mr.
This
Alexander,
is contract, this is civil service.
Let me see if I understand your position. You agree that the deputy constables are at-will employees?
That they are? They are not. Okay. They are not at-will.
Okay. You agree, however, that they do not have a right to a term of employment?
Well, I'm saying that they're not restricted to a term of employment. They don't. They're not restricted to 4 years. That's what 158.010 and E makes.
So you agree that the deputy constables do not have a right to a term of employment?
Right.
If
they're not, they don't have a guaranteed right to a term of employment.
Let me try to state it so that I'm clear on what your position is. If they are terminated, or the other side would say their terms expire, well, you wouldn't agree that their terms can't expire. You would say that they must be terminated for cause, and that's the only way they can be discharged.
Correct.
But you also agree, don't you, that 4.21 is not exclusive. It includes the language including but not limited to in the laundry list.
Let's talk about that, because I think that's
isn't best. That isn't that inconsistent with our
no, and
Brown?
I'm glad you brought that up because it's on my list. The doctrine that you need to look at to address this argument about the laundry list is the doctrine, it's a Latin phrase, Justice Jefferson used it in his Hilco case, and I'll pronounce it wrong, adjustum generis. Okay, and actually I'm quoting now from a dissenting opinion by Justice Hankinson in the case of City of Belmead v. Torres, because it's an excellent statement applicable here. When a statute sets out a specific list followed by a general phrase, here we have that specific list, then we have a catch-all general phrase. The general phrase is interpreted by the adjustum generis canon of construction, which states that the general phrase is limited to the same type of things that are listed more specifically. So if you look here, here's our list. There's the specific list, and then we got the general catch-all. What that means is that the cause that you have to have under H, the catch-all, has to be of the same dignity as these other things, which have teeth.
So budget constraints don't come in there.
They do. I'll tell you how budget constraints come in. You need to look at, and I wish I could cite you chapter and verse to this, I think it's Section 7, layoffs. There's a whole provision on layoffs.
In the manual.
In the manual. Okay. In other words, if you have got a situation, when you're a civil service employee, you're not protected from a layoff. You're not. In fact, if you look at, here's a great case. The Ingram case is a great case that says just that. It's... this is the 17 years ago, wasn't contested by them. The civil service protection afforded Category C employees includes protection for dismissal, parenthetically, except for layoffs.
Where is it in the manual? You say you're talking about adjustum generum, and I'm just asking you, where's the language in the manual that gives you flexibility on budget constraints?
Clerk's Record 388-389.
What is that?
I'm sorry?
What is that?
That is the provision in the policy manual talking about the ability to lay off civil service employees. In other words, if you are in a budget crunch, if you don't have enough money to maintain people, under the civil service rules, there's a whole set of rules about you can lay them off. So you're not stuck with them. So that's what deals with that.
And what does the grievance procedure say? Is it mandatory?
The grievance procedure is mandatorily available to those who are terminated. In other words, if you are terminated, then you have the opportunity to grieve.
Do you have to exhaust remedies before you can go to district court?
Generally speaking, yes. I believe that's correct. Yes.
Constables have to have official bonds, don't they?
I believe.
By statute, they
are you talking, I know the constable does, yes.
The constables... may also be liable on their official bonds for acts of deputy constables, correct?
I believe that that's correct.
Does it make sense, then, that the constables will want to have working for the constable persons who he or she thinks will not make them liable for their acts, people that they have confidence in?
Well, this is the balance. Good question. This is the balance. That's one of the factors in the balancing test that a county decides in deciding whether to adopt civil service. And what these rules say, I mean, if you've got somebody who's incompetent, you can get, that's good cause. You get rid of them for incompetence. And so In other words, Dallas County has perceived that these provide adequate protection to the constable, but also to the deputy constables, and avoid the patronage hiring and firing problem that can arise.
But there could be a difference between incompetence and not just having a great deal of confidence in somebody's judgment and ability. They may seem to be competent. I mean, if the people you hire at your firm, you're not liable for a bond on them, but you hire people that you have confidence in, right?
Correct.
And if there's a statutory obligation that you may be liable on an official bond for the acts of the people who are working for you, and you're elected for a specific term, wouldn't you want to have the ability to make sure those persons are not going to get you held liable for some of their conduct? So doesn't it seem to make sense that new constables who are elected might have the ability to hire and fire?
Oh, they would die to have that. They would want to have that. I'm glad that all of my employees are at will. Okay? But please understand that when a county makes the decision, are we going to be at will, there's a good policy reason to go at will. There are also countervailing reasons not to go at will. A good way to look at this is to hop on Google, type in civil service history, and you will see there laid out precisely why it is that we have civil service offered around this country. It's to deal with the equally divisive problem of new administration comes in and the rank and file is at risk every 4 years. They're at risk of being disturbed because someone comes in and goes, you know, I'd rather have my people than them. It's a concern with patronage.
Let me just follow up one final thing on the disclaimer question. I want to make sure I understand your argument. Your argument is that by this policy manual, there was an intent to create civil service protection, but to disclaim contracts of employment.
Well, and let me just read the... make sure that we're not just talking about policy manual, because there's a lot of cases out there involving employee handbooks.
But we don't know if they had the notice on the front.
Okay, right. But let me just make sure that we're talking about civil service rules. This is provision 1.00 of the manual. The civil service system is a systematic method of appointing employees. The following rules are designed. These are civil service rules.
I understand.
Okay.
I want to make sure I understand your argument.
Okay.
We're adopting civil service
rules. Civil service rules. We're saying that you can't use this manual to sue us for breach of contract, but we're not in any way disclaiming that by that somehow a contract provision disclaims a constitutionally protected property interest. That has been recognized for 17 years by three different courts.
We're guaranteeing you civil service protection. We're not guaranteeing you employment.
We are guaranteeing you civil service protection. We are not guaranteeing you employment. It's not a contract of employment. You don't have a contract for a term. We're not guaranteeing you employment. You only have employment. In fact, you're subject every day to either a layoff or tripping up and being discharged for good cause. So it's not a contract of employment. Correct.
If we look just at 4.21, isn't that consistent with an at-will state? I mean, in Texas, you can dismiss an employee for incompetence, offensive conduct, et cetera, but you can also do it for no reason, just to dismiss.
Well, if we view it in a vacuum.
Well, let's view it in a vacuum. Under 4.21, an employee in Texas, without any sort of good cause exception, an employee in Texas may be dismissed without prior notice for just cause, including but not limited to all these things. Right?
Right.
So under 4.22, is that where you base your argument that this is any termination here must be for cause because you have to provide a notice of the cause?
It's bolstered with that, but also 4.21, a good way to look at it is in context. And this is the way to understand the words. Category A is non-civil service, and therefore they may be dismissed without good cause. They may be dismissed for, as some courts have said, good reason, bad reason, no reason. Category B, same thing. They may be dismissed for whatever reason. That begs the question. We know that Category C is given civil protection, special protection. So the question is, what are the permissible grounds for which these people may be dismissed? And the answer lies in 4.21. They may be dismissed for just cause. Just cause is a term of art. It's a term that has very real meaning. It has teeth. It gives a perfectly good set of examples. Under a justum generis, it's not void for that reason. And so, yes, I mean, it is very much, this is a just cause limitation, as three different courts have held over the years, and Dallas County never once disputed in cases where, if that was their position, they'd be screaming like mad. Let's take Ingram and look at that. What in Ingram, the predicate assumption going in was that Category C employees have a property interest in their job. What did the county say about that? Not a peep. Their whole dispute was, they said, well, they're Category A. We agree if they're Category C that they're protected, but we're saying they're Category A.
I take it you think Deputy Walton's notarized statement was just ineffectual. Deputy Walton's statement at the beginning of his appeal.
Okay, are you talking about the one that he signed?
Yes.
Yes.
That was just ineffectual.
Ineffectual, and the reason for that is that was something handed him by the constable. It wasn't from the county. Only the county can take away that which the county hath provided. And so for that reason, it's just a nullity.
When would the county give him something to sign? Why would it be the constable?
What? Why would the constable do that?
No. Wouldn't he expect that the constable, his employer, give him that document as opposed to some high-ranking official within the county?
Let's be clear about what this is. This is the deputy constable about to do something that the deputy constable can't do and hands him something which he signs, which, you know, any employee is going to sign something the employer gives it. The question is, was that an authorized act? I mean, the only one that can take it away is the Dallas County Commissioner's Court. Once the Dallas County Commissioner's Court has given that protection, which is precisely to prevent elected officials from being able to alter the status, the elected official can't do it. It's a nullity. So only the Dallas County Commissioner's Court would do it. I want to just see if I've hit all 9-7 of my things. I think I did.
Any further questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Is there any difference between procedural and substantive due process protections in this context?
Yes, absolutely.
And what would those be?
Procedural due process protection gives you the opportunity to be heard. Did you notice in the opportunity to be heard? And it attaches when there are property rights that can arrive from circumstances under state law or under the federal constitution. The majority of federal courts dealing with substantive due process.
Let me rephrase my question. Okay. In terms of damages.
Yes. So there is a difference. The damages that flow from procedural due process are tied to the harm that was caused as a result of having been denied the process. So, for example, you get your hearing. You may get nominal damages. If the decision is to reverse, let's say that you have the hearing and the decision is the same.
Well, and that leads to my question about the proper disposition from your viewpoint. Do you agree that there was no reason for the termination, or would you want it to be remanded for a grievance hearing in accordance with the statute?
I don't agree that there's been a termination, because I agree that the constables finished their term and were no longer employees.
I understand, but if you were to lose on that, if we were to find the procedural due process right that was violated here, the disposition would be
that I think they get a hearing.
They get a hearing.
I think that that's what they get. What they got were damages for the loss of their employment, which is not what you get.
Because the briefing says that everyone seems to agree that if they got that hearing, there was no reason, and therefore there would be no purpose.
And, you know, they actually had a hearing. The record reflects that the Wyland plaintiffs, in fact, did have a hearing before the Civil Service Commission to take up the very issue that we're talking about here. And the civil service and the three commissioners decided that they're terminated. So the question is, they may have had all the process they were due in any event.
But the hearing did not involve the substantive reasons for their termination, which they claimed they were entitled to. I know you disagree, but the hearing was about whether they had a grievable claim, not about the substance or the merits of their they would say, termination.
Well, I think that actually they got into the substance of it, because what their complaint was that they had not been re-sworn in, and they had to discuss during the course of that hearing the legal effect of that. So it's fuzzy, I agree, Justice Wainwright, but they did have process.
Ms. Hankinson?
Yes.
Mr. Alexander, I think, has indicated that Dallas County has adopted these civil service rules. previously. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
That Dallas County has adopted these civil service rules.
That's yes. Dallas County adopted a civil service system, but there are different kinds of civil service systems. Some of them provide substantive rights. Some of them do not. This one does not. The appropriate inquiry is to look at the manual and see under Texas law whether the at-will relationship has been altered and meet the requirements of Texas law to do that to create a property interest. The proceed, what they want to do is say, well, if you adopt a civil service system, you automatically get a property right. That's not the inquiry. Here they got grievance procedures. And Justice Owen had asked me, we've been talking about a feel-good system. The truth is that it's feel good, but it's very real, too, because employees do get these decisions reversed. They do come in and have the commission reinstate them and give them back pay. When you go to district court, there may not be a reason if it's as a result of an at-will employment determination, but if the termination was the result of something illegal, termination for race, age, whatever it might be, then there would be something for a district court to review. So these are not just on the books and meaningless. They give real benefit to the employee.
They just simply say you're terminated. They don't cite the layoff provision that you said you're terminated.
Right.
And there's nothing. What does the district court review in that case? I mean,
they may not in that. There may not be anything to review in that case. There may not be, but it doesn't mean that the employee going through the process is going through a meaningless process because they may get reinstated. They may end up having. The point is that there are two separate inquiries here. Two separate inquiries. The civil system is a different inquiry in what it does. We have to go back to basic Texas law on whether a constitutionally protected property interest.
86.011 says that each deputy constable must qualify in the manner provided for deputy sheriffs.
Right.
How does a deputy constable qualify?
I think if you look, I don't have the statute right in front of me, but if you look back under the deputy sheriff.
The provisions that say they have to be 21 years of age, they have to have a high school diploma,
right.
Some other things. What about the requirement that they serve at the pleasure of the sheriff?
Well,
that the sheriff must like them and want them to be working for them. Is that a requirement?
I don't know that that is a, quote, requirement in terms of that, but clearly the constable has to appoint them. So that does involve the discretion of the constable. And, in fact, that, to me, sounds a whole lot like the same kind of thing, given that the appointment power lies with the constable who appoints their particular deputies.
Further questions? That concludes the argument and all arguments for the morning, and the marshal